Today's daf is Erchin Daf Kaf Aleph. I'm actually going to start on the Mishnah on Kaf Amud Bet because it's a little hard to start in the middle. Because when the page ends, what we're going to see is there's a whole sugya on the Mishnah, on Daf Kaf Amud Bet. And then at the end of the daf, they're going to say, oh, some people say this whole sugya, actually the discussion that happened had nothing to do with this Mishnah, it had to do with a different Mishnah. So that's where we're going to go, but I'll just review anyway since we didn't get to do it together. Try to go through it quickly. Okay, the Mishnah at the top of the page, shur ze ola, ubayit ze korban. Okay, if I say this shur is going to be for a korban ola, which again, what happens? You burn the entire offering, it all goes up. Ubayit ze korban, this house is going to be a korban. Umet hashor v'nafal abayit, something happens to them. This is, we've talked about this many, many times in Shas. This is called, are you chayav v'achrayut or not? Do you have to replace it if something happens? So since you said zeh, this house, this shor, and then something happened to it, so patur mi l'shalim, you're not responsible anymore because that shor is not in existence. Shor zeh alai ola, but if you say this shor is going to be for me in ola, where the focus is on yourself, ubayit zeh alai korban, meit hashor v'nafal abayit chayav l'shalim. Since you put the responsibility on yourself, then it's no longer there. It doesn't matter. You have to replace it with a different item, even though you actually said shor zeh. Okay, this shor. Now comes Rabbi Chiya Bar Rav, and he says, lo shanu ela da amar dimei shor zeh alai ola. He says, by the way, amend the Mishnah. The Mishnah said shor zeh alai ola, but it really should mean in the second, the latter part of the Mishnah, if you said the value of this shor is upon me as an ola. Because really, if you said shor zeh alai ola, kevan damar zeh umet, eno chayav b'achor yuto. Because what did you mean when you said alai? Alai lahavio kamar. When you say shor zeh alai ola, it's actually a confusing thing because you're saying this shor, which should mean only this shor, but you say is upon me. So it's a little bit tricky. Usually it's either you say shor zeh or alai. Right, but this case you have shor zeh and alai together. So it comes to Priya Barav and he says, no, the pshat of the Mishnah is not, if you say shor zeh alai ola, since you said shor zeh and the animal dies, you're not responsible. What it really meant was if you said I'm giving the value, dimei. What it really meant is you said dimei, the value of the shor is upon me. Then you're obviously accepting the value of it and not the actual shor itself. So now they bring a contradiction to this. Meitibe. Shor zeh ola. Hashor hekdesh u'mo'alimbo. If you say this shor is ola, same kind of case, or right, what happens? The shor is hekdesh. There's a din of me'ila if you misuse it by accident, because it's consecrated property. Mate onignav, if it was stolen though or died, eno chayav b'achor yuto, because you said shor zeh. But if you say shor zeh alai ola, now this just sounds exactly like our Mishnah, now what would you expect based on what we just explained? It doesn't say demei, so it must be, you're also not chayav b'achor yuto, but what does it say? Hashor hekdesh u'mo'alimbo, same thing, it is going to be hekdesh, but mate onignav chayav b'achor yuto, now how could you be, right? In other words, this should be demei shor, not, according to what we just said, only demei shor, and this says it without the word demei. So the Gemara obviously answers, mi alima mi manitin du kimna dekamra demei, hachinamra dekamra demei. Just like in our Mishnah, it used the lashon shor zeh alai ola, and what do we say? Shor zeh really, alai ola really means demei shor zeh alai. We're going to say the same thing about that braita. Don't bring that braita as a contradiction, we're just going to say, add the word demei to both of them, right? Just like we said, we're adding the word in the Mishnah, we'll add the word in the Braita. Okay. But that doesn't really work, though, because how many seifa? Look at the seifa of that same Braita. The seifa of that Braita, so the Reisha kind of looked like ours, shor zeh ola, shor zeh alai ola. We tried to say that means demei, but what's the problem? The next line says, right, mi deseifa dekaamar demei, in the seifa it actually talks about demei, which means that what? Reisha deloka amar demei. In our Mishnah, it was very easy to answer that because we didn't have a next line which talked about the value of. But in this case, it actually said the value of after. Dekatani seifa, demei shor ola. If you say demei shor ola, right, the value of this shor will be an ola, then hashor kulin, well, the shor doesn't have hekdesh to it. It's not sanctified, the emo alimbo, and therefore there's no din of misuse of consecrated property. Mate onignave no chayav b'achor yuto. Aval, what are you chayav? Chayav b'achor yutamav. If something happens to the shor, you're not chayav to bring that shor. Well, the shor is dead. But you are chayav to bring the value of the shor because you committed the value. So in case number three there were three cases. And the third case was demei. You can't then say the second case was demei. So we're left with a question. So reisha b'seifa deka amar demei. right? Can't possibly be. They say, actually it can't be. Reisha v'seifa, this is the answer. Deka amar demei. Both of these are talking about demei. What's the difference then? You have to explain, if they're both demei, then what's the difference between demei shor ze alai ola, where we say, you're not chayav b'achrayut, and then, right, you can look, I charted this all out, as you can see, right, shor ze alai ola, shor hekdei shumolim, bomeidu nina chayav b'achrayut, that we say is demei shor, and you're chayav, versus demei shor ola, where we say, you're not chayav b'achrayuto, you're just chayav b'achrayut ami. So what's the difference? Reisha de amar, and here I charted it, you can see, yakdish shor hashor l'damav. You said right away, I'm sanctifying this shore for its value. Okay, then you're chayav b'achrayut. But seifa deka amar l'chashayavo damav yikdishu. The seifa is a case where you said, when I sell it, then that money will have sanctity. Okay? So that's the difference between the reisha and the seifa. One is where you said, I'm makdish it right now for its money, its value. I'm makdish its value, even though you haven't sold it. Okay? The second case is you sell it immediately, okay? The opposite. You say, when I sell it, then the money will be sanctified. In that case, if it dies, so then you're not responsible because it's dead and you didn't do it yet. So then they say, v'ha ein adam makdish davar shelo ba la'olam. But wait, and this is going to be the important part that we're going to now copy out to the next sugya. But wait. How can you sanctify something that's not in existence? Yes, the shore has value, but you didn't sell it yet, so you don't have money yet to say the money from the sale. There is no sale. How can you be mocked or something? This is a story we've seen many times, that you can't sanctify something that doesn't exist. So, Amar Le, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ha Mane. Oh, don't worry. This goes according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir thinks that you can be mocked or something that doesn't exist yet. Ika da amre, some people, now we're going to have a girsa within different girsas, okay? We're going to have, that's the first version of this. In that, there's a minor different version, which is this last, very last line where Rabbi Yehuda comes and says, with the Gemara questions, it says, what do you mean? How could you be makdish davar she'eino bala olam? And comes the answer, oh, you can, it's Rabbi Meir. Some people say that discussion happened like this. Amar le Rav Papa la Abaye, v'amar le Rami Bar Chama le Rav Chista. Either Rav Papa said it to Abaye, or Rami Bar Chama said it to Rav Chista. Kiman, ki Rabbi Meir. What, are you trying to say that this braita is like Rabbi Meir? Da'amar, adam makdish tavar shelo ba'al olam. That would be weird to say that, because that's one guy's opinion, right? One rabbi's opinion. Not everybody agrees with that. And Amar le, ve'ela kiman. And his answer is, well, who else would it be according to? In other words, yeah, it is Rabbi Meir. Okay, and don't question that. So one was sort of, it's a question, who does it go by? And the answer is Rabbi Meir. The other one was this question, how could you possibly say this is Rabbi Meir? And the answer is, well, who else would it be? It must be Rabbi Meir. That's the whole first sugya. Now we're going to take this sugya and actually say that this sugya happened. This was whole discussion ensued about a different sugya. V'ika d'matne la'aha. So some people had a different version that it all was talking about this case. Hamaskir bayit l'chaveiro v'ni naga. Somebody rents you a house, and the house becomes a bayit menuga, okay? It has leprosy. Now, what happens when it has leprosy? Well, you have to leave the house. The kohen has to check it, right? Then, theoretically, they might knock down the house at a later stage. So, you kind of got messed up because, right, this goes back to Baba Metzia, where we had a socher et hapara, you know, and then the par, or socher et hachamor, and then the chamor dies, or, you know, what do? You go back and you say, hey, I was trying to use the animal now. So, what happens here? Af al pisha chalto kohen, even though he designates this house as a tzarat house, omer lo haresha chalafanecha. The person who rented it to you can say, listen, the landlord can say, look, you know, you rented this house, this happened, I can't help it, your problem. Nitzcho, but if he destroys the house, if in the process of the bayit menuga and it gets to the stage where they have to actually destroy the house, then chayav lamid lo bayit. In other words, a house that's in existence just has a problem. Okay, tough luck. But if they destroy the house, then he has to give him a different house. Okay? So now, hikdisho, what if, while you're living in that house that you rented, the owner of the house, the landlord, basically sanctifies the house. So hadar bo ma'aleh sachar lehektesh. So your landlord is no longer your landlord. Your landlord is the Beit HaMikdash. So instead of giving your rent check, to the landlord. You give it to the Beit HaMikdash because he already, the house is designated to Hekdesh. Higdisho Hadarbo. So now they say, okay, wait a minute. That's the source. So now they say, wait a minute. Higdisho Hadarbo. Hechi Matzi Machdishla. What?
That was if the occupant did it. And only later they asked about the landlord.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. Sorry.
Because the whole question, then how can he do it if he doesn't actually...
Oh, you're right. You're right. I already explained it according to the conclusion. Thank you for correcting me. Okay. So let's... Sorry, I messed up the punchline. Hikdisho hadarbo... It's a matter of like where you put the comma here. Hikdisho hadarbo, if the person, while you're renting the house, you say, I'm sanctifying this house... So then, ma'ale sachar lehekdesh. So he gives sachar lehekdesh. So the Gemara asks, hikdisho hadarbo, hechti machdish la. How on earth could a renter be machdish the house? Doesn't it say in the pasuk, ish ki ekdish beto kodesh, right? If you sanctify your house, so now, and it says kodesh la Hashem, amarachmana. Right, the pasuk says, person who sanctifies his house. Now, what does that sound like? Ma beto bershuto av kol bershuto. You can only sanctify something that you own. When you rent a house, you don't own it. You can't sanctify it. So what do they say? Hachikamar. This is what it meant to say. Hikdisho maskir, when the maskir, now you already know what the answer is because I already told you, if the person who owns the house, the maskir is the one who rents it out, then hadarbo ma'aleh sachar lehekdesh. So now they say, wait, but we got a problem with that answer also, which maybe makes sense as to why they didn't think this was the way to read it, because hikdisho maskir hechi darbe b'me'ilakai. How can you live in a house that's sanctified? If you're living in a house that's sanctified, basically what you're getting use of consecrated property, that's not allowed. Vitu, and additionally, malesachar lehekdesh, how could you give your rent to hekdesh? Kevan de ma'alba, once you misuse consecrated property, nafik lesachar lechulin. Basically, what happens? You no longer, that item, if you misuse consecrated property, that item is no longer hekdesh. So you, it's chulin, the rent. So you shouldn't even give it to hekdesh. What are you supposed to do when you do me'ila? Theoretically, what you're supposed to do, it's a little crazy in this case, you're supposed to pay the value of what you misused, which would mean you'd have to pay the entire value of the house to hekdesh, but the rent no longer would be sanctified because you already, first of all, you have to pay the value of the house and an additional fifth. In this case, it's going to cost you a ton of money. But the rent is no longer going to be hekdesh because you already kind of took off the hekdesh by paying that money. So that doesn't make any sense either. So what's the case? Now we finally get back to where we started. De'amar l'cheshayavo scharo yikadesh. Ah, it's a case where he said, when I get the rent, that rent will be sanctified. He wasn't sanctifying the house. He was sanctifying the rent payment. So he's basically saying, as soon as you pay me rent, that rent will be hektish. So now comes our question. V'ha ein adam makdish davar shelo ba'lo olam, right? But didn't we say you can't be makdish something? You haven't gotten your rent payment. How can you say the future rent payment I'm going to get is sanctified? You're not allowed to sanctify something that's not in existence. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Now you know how it's going to end. Hamane Rabbi Meir. This must hold, the source must hold like Rabbi Meir. Da'amar adam makdish davar shelo ba'lo olam. Ika de Amre, and here comes the second version, within the second version, right, the second version of this part. Ika de Amre, some people say, Amre le Rav Papa la Abaye, but Amre le Rav Mary Bar Chama le Rav Chista, either Rav Papa said to Abaye, or Rav Mary Bar Chista said to Rav Mary Bar Chama said to Rav Chista, Kiman, ki Rabbi Meir, da Amar, Adam Makdish Tavar Shalom, Ba'al Olam, what? The way you're explaining this, it would have to be like Rabbi Meir. That doesn't make any sense. And then he answers, "Amar lei ve'ela kiman." Who else could it be like? It must be like Rabbi Meir. Okay. So there, that's why I went back, because it makes a lot of sense. Then you see the two sugyas are both a discussion about is this source holding right. In the end, they basically conclude either which way you read it, that source is holding like Rabbi Meir, because both our case and the case that they brought from renting a house are both cases where you can only explain it according to Rabbi Meir, because in the end, the way they explain the case, again, you have to remember, this is, both cases, it wasn't the pshat. right? It was a way they struggled with the pshat. The pshat didn't make sense. They explained it some other way that it was talking about the value of, right, the rent that's going to come to me, in which case they explained it in such a way that it's coming to me in the future. And then they said, well, the only way, once we've explained it this way, the only way to make have it make sense is to say that it's all Rabbi Meir.
Okay.
Yes, sure.
It's not kind of clear from the story of Chana, who, I mean, a parallel story said, if I have a baby, then that baby will...
The way Chana sanctified Shmuel, Yafet, where she, how could she sanctify something that wasn't in existence?
Right.
There, all the more so, it's a very good example, right, where she wasn't even pregnant yet, right? She's basically saying, Yafet, that's a good analogy about saying...
Except that was a qualified, I mean... If I have a baby, whereas they know, he knows that the rent is, the rent is already set up where she might or might not get pregnant.
I guess, but also, first of all, the house could fall down and there won't be any rent. We also said rent only comes levasof. Remember, the rent is only in existence when the when
right. But
the
situation for
up.
The rent, it's a little less tenuous.
It is less tenuous,
saying, but,
and yet, yeah. And then what do you see in Chana? It was valid what she said.
Right, she decided to follow through.
Again, right. So what you're questioning is, it's a good question, what some people say, that halachically, theoretically, she didn't really have to bring him to, dedicate him to God. Also, in general, her case was a unique case. We don't usually have people dedicate humans to God, right? It's a much more strange case. In general, we see things that happen in the Torah and the Nevi'im are a little different than the standard, right? They don't even discuss that kind of a case, I don't think. Again, maybe it's a little more similar to Erechim, where we give the value of someone to the Beit HaMikdash, but there we're not actually giving them as a person. But nice comparison. Okay, new Mishnah. Chai ve Erechim me'mashkinin otan. Okay, when it comes to, if you owe Erechim, you say Erki alai, and you don't pay up, so the treasurer of the Beit HaMikdash can come knocking on your door and say, listen, pay up, and if you don't, I'm going to take something from your house. Chayaveh chata'ot va'ashamot, but if you're chayav a chata'at or an asham because you did a sin, then ein memashkinin otan. We don't come into your house and take collateral. Why is that? Well, it's very simple. The assumption is that when you voluntarily offer something and then you don't pay up, well, you may never pay up. But when you owe something because you have a sin on you, you're going to want to get atonement for it. So therefore, we're not concerned that you're not going to pay up, so they don't actually come to your house and force you to pay, because the assumption is you're going to pay anyway. Chayaveh olot u'shlamim, if you're chayav an ola or shlamim, now ola and shlamim, the only time where they're a chiyuv is when it's a communal offering. That's obviously not what we're talking about, because no one's going to come to your house and say, hey, pay up for the communal offering. It's only if you did an individual one, well, all those are going to be voluntary offerings. So again, we're in the realm of voluntary offerings. So again, we're going to say mimashkinin otan. So the gizbar, the treasurer, can come to your house and take something. Soon in the Gemara, we're going to see exceptions to the rule. Af al pi she'ein mitchaper lo, even though, now we have a bit of a problem here. You're not going to get atonement. Now, the word atonement here doesn't really mean atonement, or in the literal form, because atonement would really only apply to a chata'at and asham. And right now we're talking about when the beitin comes and forces you to pay. Now we're going to talk about, and we're going to get from here to get nashim, even in the Mishnah they're going to make the comparison, which is, since you force someone to do something. So what they're going to say is that ein mitchaper lo ad shi itratze. It's known that you can't get atonement. Now again, here they don't mean atonement for a sin particularly, although we did say, if you remember, we learned that a korban ola does provide atonement for, let's say, a mitzvah aseh that I didn't do or something like that. But it's not atonement in the sense of I did a sin, I get atonement. Okay? But the korban is, let's put it this way, the korban isn't really accepted unless you want to bring it. How do we know that? Sheneemar lirtzono. Okay, let's look at the pasuk. Pasuk is about a korban ola. It says, im ola korbano mina bakar, if your korban ola is from the bakar, zachar tamim yakrivenu, you have to bring a male one, el petach ol moed, yakriv oto, you will sacrifice it, lirtzono, to your own will, lifnei Hashem. So what do they learn from lirtzono? You have to do it willingly. So how could it be that they're going to come to your house and force you to pay money for this animal when you can only actually bring the korban? It's only going to be successful if you actually want it. So since you already know this by get, I assume most people know this, kofinoto ad shiomar rotzani. We force him to do, we come to the house and we say, you must bring this But you must bring it willingly. So say that you're going to do it willingly, right? We're going to take this away unless you say, I'm going to do this willingly. You twist your arm, right? Okay? So until you say, Rotzani. V'chein ata omer b'gitei nashim. And the same thing with get nashim, since you can't give a get unless you want to give a get, what do we do when a husband won't give a get to his wife? Kofino to ad shiomar Rotzani. We force him until he says, I want to give the get. Okay, so first exception to the rule we're going to get. Okay, again, I've charted all this out on the sheet today. Amara papa pamim shechayavei chataot mimashkinin otan. Chayavei olot ein mimashkinin otan. There are some cases where it's the actual reverse. A chatat theoretically can be forced. You know, we can force him to bring it. Because, again, what did we say? We're usually not worried he's going to do it. But in this case, obviously, we're going to be concerned he's not going to bring it for some reason. And likewise, there's sometimes where chiyuv ola, we're sure you're going to bring it, and therefore we don't come into your house, pounding on your door and forcing you to bring it willingly. So what are the cases? Okay, if you remember, a nazir brings three korbanot. He brings a chatat, in ola, and a shlamim. So now, why in this case are we concerned he's not going to bring a chatat? Because it was said, in gilach alacha mishloshtam, part of the process is he also shaves, because remember the nazir grows his hair. So he brings one of, as soon as he brings one of the korbanot and shaves, yatsa. He's already yotze, meaning, right, yotze means he's fulfilled his obligation, meaning that he can already, all the restrictions of nazir are no longer upon him. Now in that case, right, or let's continue, v'im nizrak ala v'cha min adabim, and if, in other words, first, he's gilach on one of the korbanot, meaning he did his giluach before he finished all three korbanot, and then he sprinkled the blood of one of them, hutara nazir l'shtot yain u'l'tameh l'meitim. So therefore, since it sounds like any one of them, theoretically, you could bring the ola first, and then you end up with your chatat, right? Now, since he already is allowed to drink wine and he can become in contact with dead people, pasha bavalo maite. We're worried that maybe he won't ever bring the korban chatat. Okay? Remember, there's a whole question anyway. Why does the nazir bring a chatat? It's not like he actually sinned. If you remember the famous answer of Bar Kapara, not everybody agrees with this, but his answer is that he did something wrong by having to swear off of wine. We don't view that as a positive thing. We don't think that taking vows is positive. And therefore, he needs to bring a chatat, but it's not the same as, you know, I did something wrong, I misused consecrated property, and I bring a korban. Yeah, that's a different type of, right, me'ilo, although also I didn't mention, you have to bring an asham me'ilo, you have to sort of bring a korban asham. Anyway, this is different from a classic korban chatat, where you did something actually wrong, and since you're already mutar to do the things that you couldn't do before, you might actually never do it, and in that case, they can come and take money for the korban chatat. Hayavei olot eimem ashkenin otan. Now, what would be a case of a korban ola? What would we want to find? A case where you're obligated to bring an ola, and we know that you want to get to point B, and therefore you're going to make sure to bring your korban ola. So what would be a good example? Bo'olat yoledet. Why in the olat yoledet? If you remember, yoledet has to bring a chatat and an ola. It's another good case of why she have to bring a chatat, right, people? Another one of those answers given is that she swore in childbirth she'd never have children again, and you know, because of her swear, we make her, right? It wasn't really it was a bit of a false swear. That's one of the answers. Again, these are just indicative of cases where we see a model for korbanot chatat that are not directly associated with sins. The rabbis try to come up with explanations as to what could be the possible sin, but they're not really the classic chataot. But here, anyway, that's not what's interesting us. What interests us here is the ola. Okay, now by the woman, you have to bring, it says, ola and a chatat. Okay, so she has to bring the two birds. Remember, that's what Masechet Kinim is all about, the pairs of birds that you bring for this and for other cases. So now, they say, wait, my nihu, da'aktame kra, why are you assuming that, it says in the pasuk, I said it wrong, it says, you have to bring a chatat, it says you have to bring an ola and then a chatat. Okay, it's a chatat, et ha'ochal ola, I don't have the exact pasuk in front of me, but first the ola, then a chatat. So now, why would we say eimim ashkeninoto? Well, for sure you're going to bring the chatat, because we already said you always make sure to bring the chatat, and since the ola precedes the chatat, therefore it must be you'll definitely bring the ola, and therefore there's no reason the mashkein. Now, what's the issue with the ola? Why is she definitely going to bring the chatat? Because right after that it says that she then can go into the mikdash and eat. In other words, before that, she's not allowed to. I should really find the exact psukim. It'll just be more helpful in a second. It says, Tevikeves ben shnato la'ola uben yona otor l'chatat. And then it says, V'im lotim sayadades. Right, that's the... okay, or it also says, okay, in... אם לא תמצא ידע די סב, לקחה שני תורים ושני בני יונה, אחד לעולה ואחד לחטאת, וכיפר עליה הכהן וטהרה. The coin is מכפר עליה, and she becomes tahor, and tahor means she can now go into the mikdash and eat. Okay, if you remember, she has the dmei, like, does that mean that it'll like nida, but you'll let it in the beginning where she can't be with her husband for 7 days or 14 days if it's a boy or a girl. Then she ends up with this dam tohar for another 33 or 66, depending if she had a boy or a girl. Those days are dam tohar, meaning she's permitted to her husband, again, doraita law, no longer dorabana law, but doraita law. Then she's allowed to go in the mikdash only after that. And that's when she brings her korban yoledet, once she's allowed. And she can't eat kudshim until that point. So obviously she's going to do that process. And the assumption is, since it's the chatat, and the ola precedes the chatat and the pasuk, it must be she has to bring the ola first. Which means she's definitely going to bring her ola, because she has to bring the ola to bring the chatat. She has to bring the chatat in order to go into the mikdash. So their assumption right now is part of the question, really. What? Are you saying because de'akdamei kra, because the pasuk put ola first, that's why? V'ha'amar rava l'mikra agdima katuv. The Torah just did it in that order for the Torah's purposes, but not, that's not indicative of the order you have to bring your korbanot. Theoretically, you could bring a chatat, and then you can be allowed already to go into the mikdash and eat your stuff, in which case you might never bring your ola, in which case we should be mamashkem for the ola, in which case the oledet is not a good example of a case where we're sure you're going to bring your ola. So therefore they reject this. And they say, well, let's come up with another example where you bring a number of korbanot, just like we did with the nazir. Ela ba'ola mitzorah. Okay, the mitzorah brings an ola, a chatat, and an asham. And now we're going to say, D'tanya, Rabbi Yishmael ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer. Right, it's a mistake here. Yehuda ben Broka, it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Omer, Kishem shechatato va'ashamo ikavto, kach olato ikavto. Okay, he says, just like the chatat and the asham are ma'akev, also the ola is ma'akev, meaning a mitzvah is not pure until he does all three, which means the ola he's going to have to bring, and we certainly don't need to go to his house and say, pay up. Okay, next. V'af al pi she'ein mitchaper lo ad she'it ratzeh. Okay, so now we're going into this. So Tanu Rabbanan, I'm now on the second side of our sheet, if you want to follow there. Also. Yakriv oto. Okay, so now, we had the lirtzono. Lirtzono meant you had to do it willingly. But then it says yakriv oto, which means, sort of, he must yakriv oto. Well, it's a little, doesn't work to say he must, and then it has to be, he has to be willing. So what do they learn? Melamed shekofin oto, right? Yakriv oto sounds like we can force you. Yachol baal kocho, well, can we force you against your will? Ah, tamud lomar lirtzono. Therefore, it says it can't be against his will. So, haketzad, how can you juxtapose these two opposite things that are coming out of the words that are right next to each other? Kofin oto ad she'yomar rotzeh ani. Okay, so that's how we get to this middle ground, that we force you until you say, I'm willing to do it. Amar Shmuel. Now Shmuel says, ola tzricha da'at. Okay, and ola needs intent to bring a korban ola, shenemar lirtzono, because the whole pasuk where it says lirtzono is talking about a korban ola. So now they say to him, okay, very nice you said this, Shmuel, but my kamashma and tanina. We already said this in our Mishnah, Shmuel, we don't need you to tell us halacha. It says in the Mishnah, afa pi she'im itchaper lo ad shetitratzeh, shenemar lirtzono. So it's obvious that it needs your ratzon. So what do we answer? Lo tzricha de parish le chavre. What if I say I'm going to bring a korban ola, and I don't bring it yet, and my friend comes along and he takes an animal for me and brings it to the Beit HaMikdash for me? So, now generally, what do we say? Zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. If someone's doing something to help me, we usually assume that it counts. Okay, if they do something that's beneficial for me. Now, in this case, it's beneficial because I said I was going to bring an ola. Now, I don't have to actually bring it for my own money because he took it from his money, so all the better, right? You would think that this would work. So, ma'u detema ki be'ina dat midide aval midachavre lo. Maybe you would say he needs to have his intent, but not from his friend. In other words, with the Beit Din, right, we have to, it can't be the Beit Din can come and force you, but if from his friend, maybe that will work, right? Because Zachin LaAdam Shalo B'Fanav. Kamashvalan zimnin delo nichale delechaper b'midi delo didei. When Shmuel says olatzrichadat, he was talking not about that they could come into your house and force you, but that we already knew from the Mishnah. But he's coming to say if your friend sets aside an animal for you, that doesn't work. Why? It's fascinating, right? There's a bunch of things in this daf which are all insightful into human nature. You don't want to get kapara from something your friend did. If you say, I want to bring this, you want to bring this from your own animal. You want to sort of like, you want to get this chuyot, you know, hey, I paid for this with my own money. You don't want, right? Sometimes it's nice when someone pays for you, but there's certain things that you want to pay for with your own money. Okay, that's what Shmuel says. So now, Meitivei. Now we have a contradiction from the following source. Okay, this is charted out. Chatatova ashamo shaploni alai, ladat yatsa, shelo ladat lo yatsa. Okay, if someone says, right, chatatova ashamo shaploni alai, I'm going to bring the chatat or asham for them. If it's ladat, the person said, okay, fine, then yatsa. If it's shelo ladat, if you didn't tell the person, then lo yatsa. Why? The assumption is for sure, a chatat and an asham, you don't want someone, you want to bring it from your own. You did a sin, you want to compensate for it. But olato ushlamav shaploni, and here comes the contradiction. Remember what Shmuel was talking about? He was talking about an ola specifically. When it comes to ola ushlamim shaploni alai, bein ladat, bein shalo ladat yatsa. So now we're going to have a problem, because the way we explained Shmuel was that ola tzricha dat is talking about, because it can't be talking about when the Beit Din comes and forces you, it must be talking about when your friend separated an animal, you need to approve it. According to this, in ola, you don't need to approve it. Right? Bein ladat, bein shalo ladat, yatsa. If your friend brings it for you, you're yotze. So how's Shmuel going to explain this? Amar lecha Shmuel, ki tanya hahi b'shat kapara, di'iratze b'shat hafrasha. The Braita is talking about a different case. The Braita is talking about a case where there's two stages. There's the stage we were talking about when we explained Shmuel was when you designate the animal. In the time of designating the animal, that's not what the Braita was talking about. The Braita was talking about when you're actually doing the sacrificing. So here he's saying like this. The bride is talking about b'shat kapara, where you are already iratze b'shat afresha. Your friend said, I'm going to bring this animal for an ola, and you said, yeah, sure, that's great. Once you gave your approval for that, that's what Shmuel was talking about. The bride says, the ola can be brought shalom idat. The bride is talking about the sacrificing of it. Now, let's say he already took his animal, or maybe you took your own animal, and then your friend took it to the Beit HaMikdash and went ahead with sacrificing it without telling you. That is a case where, if it's an ola, you don't need to have knowledge about it. Whereas if it's a chatad and an asham, you know, why would it be a difference? Because you're getting atonement for this for some sin. You have to know about it. You can't not be involved. Okay, so kika amina, when I was talking about my source, though, ana b'shat hafrasha, I was talking about shat hafrasha. That's the first way of understanding all this. But now the Gemara is going to say, upliga de ula, and this is why I made some charts to make it organized, he disagrees with ula. Da'amar ula, ula has the exact opposite understanding of the distinction Shmuel makes. Lo chilku ben chatat le'ola, they actually didn't distinguish in chatat and ola, ela, meaning only in the following case, shechatat tzrichadat b'shat hafrasha. He dafka says, it's the chatat that needs dat when you're separating the animal. But ola eina tzricha dat b'shat hafrasha, ela b'shat kapara. Okay, sorry, let's stop here. An ola doesn't need dat when you're separating it. If you say, I'm going to give an ola to the Beit HaMikdash, according to ula, if your friend goes and takes an animal, that's not a problem. Okay, but when do you need your dat for both? And that's only for a chatat do you have to agree to have your friend separated, not in an ola. Aval b'shat kapara, idi v'idi ledat yatsa, shelo ledat lo yatsa. But according to ula, when it comes to the actual sacrificing of it, you for sure have to be involved. Okay, so if you look at the chart now, the second to last chart on the page, here it's charted out. Okay, so Shmuel says, b'shat hafrasha, you need dat both for an ola and for a chatat. And when it comes to shat kapara, there we're going to distinguish between chatat and ola. And chatat needs dat, and ola doesn't need dat. Okay, as long as you had the original dot, that kind of takes you all the way, except for in a chatat, where you're actually getting atonement. Then a chatat would be asham also. Ula says the exact opposite. Everyone agrees that for shat kapara, you both need. That's the main part. The main part is the kapara, the atonement. For sure, everyone needs that there. But when it comes to taking the animal, in that case, if your friend takes an animal for you for an ola, it would work, not for a chatat. Okay, because again, chatat, the assumption is you want to do it yourself, so that's why it wouldn't work. Okay, so we have these two opposite approaches. So now we're going to say, wait, we have a braita now that contradicts both of them. Why? Because it says, like, they both make a distinction between chatat and asham versus ola in a particular case. This one says, chatato v'ashamo, olato u'shamav shaploni alai, ladat yatza, shelo ladat lo yatza. It's exactly the same, right? Both of them need dat. So how are we going to answer this? Very simply, Shmuel moke labashat afrasha, ule moke labashat kapara. They're each going to say that bright is talking about the case. Each one has a case where both of them, right, the chatat and the asham and the ola have the same criteria. Again, depending on, right, Shmuel says they both need dat in shat afrasha, and Ula says they both need dat in shat kapara. So this source, right, again, we have two brightot, and in a second we're going to put the two brightot up against each other. First we bring the second brightot to say this contradicts what we said. Oh no, we'll say the brightot is either b'shat kapara or b'shat afrasha. So now, amara papa matnitina da de lo kashan, and if you want to say those two brightot contradict each other, they don't, because habashat kapara, habashat afrasha. Depending on whether you're Shmuel or whether you're Ula, again, now we have these two brighto, right? Brighto number one distinguishes, and brighto number two doesn't distinguish. So now, depending on, he specifically says, one bashat afrasha, one bashat kapara, it doesn't say which one, because depending on whether you're Ula or you're Shmuel, you're going to give it, put it in a different place, right? Which one is shat kapara, which is shat hafrasha. If you look, I charted it out, right? According to Shmuel, the first source which distinguishes will be shat kapara, because Shmuel thinks shat hafrasha, it's all the same, right? They both need, and that would be the second source. And according to Ula, it's the reverse. And then they're going to say, V'emorai nami lo kashya, and now he's kind of just summarizing, and the emoraim also don't have a problem with this braita, because Shmuel moke kamaita b'shat kapara, but traita b'shat hafrasha. V'ula moke ibcha, right? And Ula does the opposite. But you could say these two brights don't contradict each other. However, emorai vaday pligi. But just to clarify, clearly Shmuel and Ula disagree. It's just the sources don't disagree because you can explain each one in its own way. So now the Gemara says pshita. What Rav Papa just said was quite obvious, right? It's basically just summarizing the sugya. Why is he telling us this? So they say, because ma'u detema, my b'shat hafrasha dekamar Shmuel. When Shmuel says the b'shat hafrasha, they both need da'at, right? What did he say? The ola needs da'at in addition to the chata, which obviously needs da'at. Maybe he meant af b'shat hafrasha, right? What did we say? The Shmuel says they both need da'at b'shat hafrasha, but b'shat kapara, only the chata does. But maybe that's not, it's not actually what Shmuel said. All Shmuel said was the ola needs da'at, right? Which we explained is b'shat hafrasha. But maybe he means even b'shat hafrasha, which means maybe across the board he thinks it needs da'at. And now, af agav da'af kamaita tiyuvte, even if we thought, let's say we thought Shmuel said this, well then the first brighter would be problematic, because according to him, right, they're always going to be, according to him, they're both going to need da'at across the board, which means there's no distinction between chatat asham versus ola, right? They're all the same across the board. In which case, the first brighter would be difficult. That was where we started. Why did we say Shmuel distinguishes between one? Because of the first brighter. But maybe you would think, well, the first bright is a koshi on Shmuel, but maybe he thinks really across the board, the ola needs da'at, just like the chata, which would match the second brighta. Kama shmalan, that's what Rav Papa had to come and really spell it all out to explain that he thinks there's two different things going on. There's shat kapara and there's shat afrasha. In shat kapara, there's a distinction. In shat afrasha, they all agree everything's going to need da'at. So that's why Rav Papa needed to spell everything out. V'chein b'gitei nashim kofi. Now we get finally to the get nashim, which is always of interest to us. Amar Papa, hai man de maser moda'a agita, moda'e moda'a. If someone, before he gives a get, he makes the following statement. He says, listen, I'm about to give a get to my wife, but I don't really mean it. Okay? You can, okay, right? You can, I mean, you laugh, but right? We know there's situations like this. Because the Beit is kind of forcing him, and he says, listen, the Beit is going to force me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go through the motions, but I don't really mean to do it. So if he does the following, Moser Moda'a, it's valid. Okay? Moda'a, right? It works. Moda'a, Moda'a, Moda'a. His Moda'a is a good one. So the Gemara says, Pshita, that's pretty obvious. I mean, why do you need to tell us that? Obviously, if he said, what I'm about to do, I don't really mean, obviously, that's the case. So, lo tzricha da'asa'ua v'iratze. Okay, what's the case? Where he It's talking about a case where he gave the get, where he, yeah, sorry, he gave the moda'an. He said, listen, I'm about to do it, and I don't really mean it. But then in between the time he gave the moda'an and he gave the get, he actually iratze. He was convinced to actually give the get. So ma'u detema bitule batle, you might have thought the get is canceled because, bitule batle, he canceled his moda'an by agreeing wholeheartedly. Kamashmalan. It comes to teach you what Rav Sheshet was coming to say is, no, if you gave a moda'ah and then you're convinced that you're actually going to give the get, doesn't matter. Since you said the moda'ah holds. Now, where does he get this from? He gets it from our Mishnah. De'im kein litni ad sheyitain. My ad sheyomar ad demevatale le moda'e. What does our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says, now, really, it should say what? Kofino to ad sheyitain. Really, all you have to do is force him till he gives the get. Why does it say we're so used to this line for the people who are familiar with this, right? Ad sheyomar rotzeani. But what the Gemara is saying is that's a very weird lashon. It should just be we force him until he actually gives the get. So, what does Rav Sheshet say? This means you have to actually have an amira. You have to say rotzeani. Meaning, I'm undoing, in order to undo a moda'ah, you have to, now this is very interesting, because what is this show? Usually we say actions are louder than words, and we say in halacha, we talked about this just a few days ago, the actions are more critical than words. Here you see again, the words are more critical. If you gave words and said, you know, whatever I'm going to do is not true, if you want to undo that, you need another statement to undo it, and it's not enough to just give the get. Because then there's all this lack of clarity. We don't really know what you're thinking. So you have to say, I'm doing this, okay? So that's a very interesting thing about Gitei Nashim. I'll end at the end of this parak. Hadran Alacha Omer Mishkali. We'll finish the parak tomorrow. We'll start with Shoma Yitomim. But I wanted to point out an interesting debate about this, about reading this sugya. So some people understand the sugya a little differently. And they say that any time, with the chidush is that any time someone wants to give a get that they're forced to, they actually have to say the words rotzani. Okay? It's not just to undo a moda'ah. It sounds like the first way of reading this is that the words rotzani are coming to say in order to undo some wording that you took upon yourself, you have to undo it with wording. Some people say, no, it's the only way to do it is it's not enough to just give it quietly. You actually have to say rotzani. Okay? The moda'ah is an additional thing. But then they basically say they learn it from the fact that they didn't need to repeat, it says twice in the Mishnah, ad sheyomar rotzeani. Because first it said, with the korban, ad sheyomar rotzeani, it could have just said, v'chein ata omer b'gitei nashim. The fact that it gives this additional and it repeats those words comes to teach you the additional part about the moda'ah. But the basic is, you have to say rotzeani. Okay? So, by the way, it's just interesting to note that when they give a get, the Beit Din has to say to the husband, do you cancel, like it's part of the procedure of the get. Do you cancel, even if we don't know that he ever made these statements, but in order to make sure the get was given baratzon and that he doesn't have some moda'ah that's outstanding, they ask him, I'm trying to think about the way they do it, but basically he has to cancel in words and say, I cancel any moda'ah that I might have made or something like that. Okay, in order to make sure. So this is just interesting, you need 18. Okay, new parak tomorrow.